And Bill Martin had a thesis that he did on the 70-90, where it was a fairly elaborate mathematical notation printer, you know, with multi dimensions and integrals and differentials and so forth. So here he is looking at this mathematics from an 1860 book or something, famous book, and paging through that. And then he's looking at some mathematics here. He inputs some mathematics. Here's a shot of his thesis, Bill Martin, on January 1967. And I think that might have been his secretary, or conceivably his wife, I'm not sure, who's at the console, the PDP-6, the microtapes are spinning. Now he's she's typing on the 35 teletype, and here it is inputted what she typed. She just typed something very simple, and here's something a little more complicated, and it does a nice job of printing that out. And I think, and it's saying MathLab, I think that he had originally done this on the 7090, and I think he moved it to the PDP-6. This is probably running all on the PDP-6, so it was written on Lisp on the 7090, so it wasn't too hard to move. And it originally had been a decoupled thing. The 7090, of course, didn't have a direct display, or other than the Kluge, which he didn't use, and that was. But he had some kind of a thing. I believe he did it on the PDP-1 for his actual thesis. But he had that body of code sitting around. Okay, here we are back to cubes. And, that was quickly that. And then here's this fellow, Carl Engelman. Yeah, the other thing I should mention about Bill Martin is that he got cancer and passed away. A very tragic loss. And it was in the early 80s. Within a fairly short period, we had David Marr pass away and Bill Martin pass away, two principals in the lab in the 82 or 3 frame. Now here's the thing. Here's what we were looking at when the big disaster happened. Okay, so here, a little bit less than halfway into the clip, we have a shot of what, unfortunately, we don't have very many shots of. So I was trying to stop it on this yesterday, on Tuesday, and the mouse driver fried, and it crashed the machine entirely, and we lost the whole session. So, what we see here, it's a little bit less than halfway into the clip. On the left is the Mobi memory, and we see it's two bays, and we see just about a third of the big bay, which is where the actual core memory stack was. The majority of the space inside that whole big bay was actually filled with the actual core memory, and you know, you could actually see the physical core there and begin to look at it when you opened it up. This right-hand bay. Is actually the interface. At the top of it are lights, normal for a memory, that show the address and data. And then there's a few controls, and this rotary knob here is a rotary knob for the self-tester. The memory had a built-in self-tester. So you could turn that rotary knob to different places, and the memory would go through a pattern, and you could put probes in there, and it was just really amazingly remarkable how small the signal was, and so forth and so on. They would come out of that pattern, but in the normal operation of the memory, that rotary knob would be straight up and so on. And then it also had a meter here and a little dealy, so you could do marginal test. Marginal test is something that the old computers had, where you could adjust the power supply just very slightly, a little bit, and that way you could stress it. So if you had something that was flaky, you could try to just adjust the power supply just a little bit, and maybe it would fail more, and then maybe you could track it down and find out what was actually going on. Oh, okay. Now the next two bays here to the right of the Mobi memory are the Type 163 DEC memory that was delivered with the machine, and the memory actually occupied both of those bays, although the right hand one wasn't too full. And not too long after this, DEC had also a very similar memory to this, which it managed to fit all in one bay. That was 16K of 36-bit memory, and it did have parity. And in fact, on the right-hand bay, we see another set of lights at the top. That was the parity option. The base machine, the parity was not built into it, but it was an option that you could buy and add on the memory bus. So when we first got our machine, it didn't have parity, and I don't know if DEC gave it to us or if we decided it was worthwhile having. The memory was pretty reliable, so I think they may have given it to us, or so just sort of maybe it wasn't ready. The engineering wasn't ready initially. Anyway, those lights there went to the parity option, and there was just a rack or two of logic in the top of the memory there, and that simply computed the parity of 36 bits and wrote and checked that, and that was the parity. Okay, and now here's a closer shot of the self-test panel on the Mobi memory. We see the manufacturer, which is Fabritec, and the address and the data lights, and then this self-test and the meter, which is associated with the marginal test. And let's see here what else we might have here. Then we go to a short thing of the cube, and now and then we had a short clip mathematical display, and now what we're seeing here, two users are sitting down at something called the GE consoles, and these were something that we bought quite early. It was a thing that had been made by General Electric, and we made a whole new interface to it. It actually had a magno-restrictive delay line as the memory in it, and it supported four of these consoles, and we see one of the consoles, a pretty good shot here in the middle of the screen. The view, the monitor was just a studio quality TV set, so it was a fairly high quality television set, as such as would be used in a TV studio monitor of the day, and the keyboard that was used in those was actually the keyboard from a 33 teletype, which was none too terribly good, and they had kludged a solenoid to do the release. Normally, of course, in a teletype, there's a mechanical motor and one thing another that does you hit the key, and the key actually has quite a lot of mechanics and locks and so forth. So once one key is down, it actually mechanically prevents any other key from going down. And there's little switches that are closed that actually include the character code for the key that you've hit. And then in order to reset it, you need to yank up again pretty hard on a reset bar, which kind of cocks it again for the next character. And they had just rigged up a solenoid in order to do that. So it's pretty kludgy, although It worked sort of okay for the time. It only had 40 characters wide, so the amount of memory it was had and so on was the length of line was pretty totally short. But on the other hand, we did have a wraparound thing, and basically for its day, it was usable. But this is what we use for displays, you know, in the same era, everyone else in the world, at a commercial company, customer of DEC anyway, was using strictly printing terminals, which were really much worse, I would say, even though the screen was so small. Stanford also, you know, was interested in displays and trying to develop displays, one thing or another. Okay, here is somebody sitting at a 35 teletype, and here's more mathematical stuff. Here's some more books and copying in formulas off from the book, fairly hairy formulas. And here apparently we've got it copied in. And here's a diagram of this thing. I think Martin's, this simplification package, I believe, did become part of Maxima later. You'd have to get the final word on that from Joel Moses, but who was the main integrator of the Maxima project and so on. But I'm pretty sure Martin's stuff went into that. And here's some things, and here's doing integrate and stuff. So this is actually an early version of Maxima. I don't know if it was called Maxima at that point, but okay, so that's 81.